An Instagram post gets an unexpected boost. A TikTok catches in the algorithm. Sometimes that's all it takes to launch someone into internet fame. But then what? This Blew Up is a new podcast documentary that reveals how social media stardom is made. It's a different kind of fame that's not always as glamorous as it looks. From Spotify and the Ringer Podcast Network, I'm Alyssa Bereznek. You can listen to This Blew Up on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a new champion.
But I'm better than you,
and you know it.
DMD.
Acknowledge me.
I'm hurt, and I'm old, and I'm tired, and I work with children.
Well, ding dong, hello.
Embrace the vision, and we want the smoke.
Lately, he just hasn't been very oozy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Wednesday Worldwide.
Worldwide.
A proud member of the faction known as the Ringer Wrestling Show. My name is Ben Cruz, and I'm a producer here at the Ringer. And with me, as always, are my tag team partners, senior editor at theringer.com, Cal Davenport, and of course, the super producer here at the Ringer, Mr. Brian H. Waters. Guys, are we fully recovered from Revolution?
I was going to ask you that. I was sitting in this chair Sunday night, well, I guess Monday morning, like half sleep, waiting for the scrum. What were you doing after the show? Like, you must have been like, well, rested, like you was going to go get some food or something.
A couple things to admit here. I had a really old man moment over the weekend. And I threw out my back. I'm just going to put it out there.
Really,
on Saturday, and my wife wasn't home. It was just me and my son. My wife had my daughter out. So it was one of those moments. So Saturday, throw out my back just completely. Couldn't move. It was a real struggle. I was like, I'll be back by Sunday because I got to go to Revolution. It was here in the Bay Area. It was at the Chase Center.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Woke up Sunday morning, arguably worse than it was the day before. There's nothing more humbling than having to email your AEW contact to be like, I can't make it because I can't move.
Right.
So I watched from the comfort of my couch, just like you guys, and was a little sad. Had a serious case of FOMO just watching it because I was like, I could literally be in the building.
You were just there.
I was at Dynamite last week on Wednesday at the Cow Palace. So, you know, it was a little appetizer for what would be Revolution. And I was like, I got a little taste. Great. Sunday's going to be awesome. Damn. And then Mother Nature and fate decided to step in and say, actually, you're going to stay home.
Sit down. Sit down, Ben.
Literally sit down and lay down. And that's all I did. So, it was a bummer, but also good show. Great show.
Good show.
I wasn't too bummed, but also my wife wasn't too bummed to know that I wasn't at my second pro wrestling show live for the, you know, that week. But
understandable.
Anyway, let's kick things off the right way. Let's steer things in a positive direction here, guys.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, making me relive some trauma there. It was great. Let's kick things off with some high spot headlines. And you know the deal. We're going to read out some of the biggest headlines of the week. And whoever wants to tag in and let it fly, let it fly. First up, fresh off the presses, Bad Bunny is hosting Backlash in Puerto Rico. You guys, one of the best celebrity wrestlers of all time. The official host of Backlash in Puerto Rico.
I guess MJF made comments about already having a Hall of Fame career. Like right now, Bad Bunny, this is the first event for WWE in Puerto Rico, I think it said, since 2005. Like he may already, his seat in the celebrity wing of the WWE Hall of Fame, it should be solidified. His Puma should be sitting right there. You know what I'm saying? Like that's huge. That's huge.
Restoring the credibility of Backlash. This is the first year in two that is not going to be named WrestleMania Backlash. And a lot of people hated that. But what my understanding and interpretation was, for people who were new to Peacock and new to wrestling through Peacock, I should say, you had to make it make sense. You called it WrestleMania Backlash so they would understand that it's the fallout from WrestleMania. But to put this show in Puerto Rico with Bad Bunny hosting, I mean, incredible. I believe it was at the Survivor Series presser. Shout out to the homie Issa, had asked Triple H about a pay-per-view in Puerto Rico. And now we're going to get it. And Bad Bunny's the guy. Like, I don't know none of his music, but I'm a fan because he loves pro wrestling like I do. And the willingness for him to go out there and put his body on the line and the work that he's doing, sign me up. Ben, Cal, can we go?
You want to go to Puerto Rico? Yeah, absolutely. Say less.
I will write a piece about my time in Puerto Rico going to, what was it, El Coliseo? Well, I forget how they what it was called, but I want to go. When I saw it, I was like, I would want to go to this event ASAP. And I don't know, not one Bad Bunny song, but do your thing. Do you for real. Do your thing for your people. Bring your passion back to your home. All that. I love it. I love it.
Leading up to Backlash, I will be firing up a Bad Bunny playlist to make myself more familiar with the man's work. It's kind of like the I feel like around that time where it's gonna be like that Shaq meme where I wasn't familiar with your work and I'm sorry that he's apologizing.
Facts.
So I'm ready to fire that up around Backlash time. Bad Bunny is to your point, Cal, of him being a WWE celebrity Hall of Famer. I mean, he's going to be a character in 2K23.
Right.
You know, like a playable character. And it's been a while since I've seen someone so beloved who's kind of entered this world from the outside, right? I mean, Logan Paul I feel like he's very divisive at this point. So either you love what he's doing or you kind of just, you treat him or you look at him as kind of one of those outsiders. Bad Bunny just... approval rating through the roof.
Well, I think it's one of those things where you can tell that it's real. Like, you know, I don't want to say, you know, gauge the actual love that celebrities have for pro wrestling when they enter. But at the very least, as someone who's spent the majority of my life being a fan of this, you can tell that Bad Bunny is as big a fan, if not more, than a lot of the people that are out there. So, and is him being able to be that big of a star in a totally different lane and say, I'm going to put these Adidas wrestling boots on. I'm going to go out there and do my thing. And then I'm going to make sure that when I'm after it, cause I don't remember what the figures was, but his last tour was tremendous, you know, in terms of box office. After I'm that level of star to go back and say, nah, let's bring the WWE outside of the States once again to my hometown. It's a beautiful thing. I don't know. It's hard to not put Bad Bunny over for something like this.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. My favorite part of this Variety article that talks about this, by the way, is in 2022, he appeared at the Royal Rumble as a contender, advancing past noted wrestlers Sheamus and, wait for it, Dolph Ziggler to make the final five. Dolph Ziggler getting some love in Variety. It's shout out Dolph.
Not your regular pro wrestling publication. There are no ringer.com. No disrespect.
They definitely just picked a name that he survived longer than in the Rumble. And they landed on Dolph Ziggler. Mad respect. Next up on High Spot Headlines, Rikishi wants to get involved in the Bloodline storyline. Ooh. The Usos, actual father.
At this point, I want to get involved in the Bloodline storyline, but I think it's, if you're going to do it, why not? You know what I mean? It's he's still been, he's done enough in terms of that type of stuff, playing with, you know, family, you know, in storylines in the past. But I think he's also made sure that if they call on him for an old school Raw or something like that, he'll come back. So it makes sense. And it's a direct lineage. We're not talking a distant uncle or somebody's cousin or anything like that. Like, no, that's their daddy. And, you know, and at some point, somebody's OG has to step up and say, hey, what are you doing? Or why are you over here? It all makes perfect sense. You just got to figure out, do you need to slot a Rikishi in there as well? And for how long?
I like it. Even though we saw Jay and Jimmy essentially come back together last week, we still don't know what Jay's thoughts is with Roman Reigns. And that's the beautiful thing about this. So you can still bring Rikishi in. You can still have him, even if he's giving a pep talk. There's so many ways, especially, I mean, you know, we also saw Alpha and Sika give Roman, you know, they anointed him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rikishi can do that with his sons.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe he can even tell Roman, like, look, ease up. It's so many different ways. I'm for it. I love the Anoa'i family, so give me more. It's a bunch of them. Give me more. I'm just waiting for Jacob Fatu to make his way.
Facts.
I mean, I think it would be an interesting way to not only solidify the kind of familial relationship that they have with the Bloodline, but also potentially increase the tension a little bit, right? Oh. Where Rikishi and Roman could have some tension, which then would put more tension on Roman's relationship with the Usos, which has been a little strained. Last couple of weeks, I should say. So I'm with it, man. I mean, when you think about it, he's kind of one of the OGs in terms of like doing things for your family, right? He did it for The Rock.
He did remember it for that? The Rock.
Always remember that Rikishi did it for The Rock. He did it first.
You could do a situation where on SmackDown, you walk into a room, like the Usos are going to Roman's dressing room. Open the door. Hey, Big Oosh, you wanted to see us? Rikishi standing there. They're mid-conversation. That's immediately. And you could do a lot. You could have Rikishi being there like, look, you better, that's a champ. You know what I mean? You could play it up like however you want it. And then when Roman leaves, there's another conversation. Again, there's so many different layers to the Bloodline story, or what I like to call the best piece of episodic television over the last two plus years. And I'm not, that is not hyperbole. That is big facts. Debate somebody else if you want. But there's so many different layers to that story, and it's very easy for a seasoned vet like Rikishi to hop right in and start dancing with the rest of them.
I mean, they brought back Lita and Trish in a way that I think is making sense on this road to WrestleMania and their involvement in actual Mania itself. I don't know if they're actually going to get Rikishi involved here in the next couple of weeks. And who knows what this Bloodline storyline looks like after WrestleMania, especially I texted you guys this yesterday. If you look at the betting odds for WrestleMania 39. If you're a degenerate gambler and like to bet on wrestling, Cody Rhodes, pretty favored right now.
Looking really good so far.
He's like -500 to beat Roman at WrestleMania. So who knows where the Bloodline storyline goes from there. But if things go as Mr. Brian H. Waters wants and this thing keeps going, inject a little Rikishi in there. Yes. I think we could, it could really spice things up. I'm all for that. Last one. Here on High Spot Headlines, Vince McMahon showed up to Raw with a, quote, creepy little mustache.
Yuck.
My guy was looking like Gomez Adams out there, apparently.
I hated whatever that photo is on my timeline. I hate it. I guess the bigger picture is the conversation around not just Vince being there, because I imagine he's been there more than we realize, but how much, how deep are his tendrils in the day-to-day product? Because it feels like it could be more than what people may have thought it was originally.
Yeah, I love the internet. They get so creative.
They do. They do.
Photos. They do.
I still want to believe that Vinnie Mac doesn't have much to do with what's going on the creative side. I'm liking WWE right now. It's been real good to me. You know, it was before it was like, oh, it was good. You know, it's what I usually eat. You know, but it was went from a regular steak to some seasoned steak with some vegetables. And I want to keep it like that.
Indeed. I mean, he was the big part of this that came out too was that he was in Gorilla, right? And that's where people kind of raised an eyebrow in a non-Rock way, where it was, well, you know, and there's the report from Dave Meltzer that, you know, he's a little bit more involved, as you alluded to, Cal, than people are letting on. I mean, has in the last couple of weeks, has there been a moment for each of you, where you've thought, that felt very Vincian, you know, that felt very like a Vince-y move?
Well, according to Dip, there was Omos and Brock Lesnar.
That's probably the bill. I mean, at a certain point, Omos, the guy who was getting a big push before Vince, you know, went away, getting literally a match with Brock Lesnar. But that may be the one. Like, I don't know, you know, anything with the bloodline, it doesn't really feel like, you know, it's been too off of what the storyline's been in general. Do you think Charlotte Flair coming back and getting the, if you wanted to say her coming back and winning the title and then getting into the Rhea Ripley story, if you wanted to say something like that, I could say maybe going back to that storyline could give you something. But they're also just, you know, Rhea particularly has been a beast in the time, especially over the last 6 months. So it's tough. It's really tough to say. And I am not someone who claims to know anything about that stuff.
Do you think the Omos thing, though, is more or was more, if you believe the reports that are out there, that Brock didn't necessarily want to work with Bray? Because so Bray, obviously Bray and Lashley are headed towards a program with each other at Mania. And I think the initial pitch was Bray Brock, and Brock said no. I'm not here to defend Omos Brock. I don't want to be that guy, but I'm just trying to figure this out, like piece it together. And it does feel like a Vince match, but
I guess the question is, why would Lesnar have said no to Bray? He didn't want to be a part of like the spooky mysticism type stuff, or?
I think there's this aura around working with Bray that if you do, it doesn't really, you don't come out of it well on the other side. I mean, Seth, in the nicest way possible, kind of mentioned that when he worked with The Fiend, you know, for
that
the
was
title.
Rough.
It was rough. And, you know, Seth had a point. So I don't know if Brock is feeling or was feeling that same type of way. That being said, I mean, I would have been all in on Bray Brock. That would have that piqued my interest. I mean, I think Bray and Lashley are doing their thing right now and they're kind of making it work. But Brock Bray would have been, I'm not a big Brock guy, I would have been bought in.
For all my hip hop lovers out there, I'm going to assume that like Bobby Lashley was recently, maybe Brock is scared to get put up on that Summer Jam screen. I mean, there's a lot that Bray Wyatt could go through with the Brock Lesnar history. And just like, you know, hitting or missing moonsaults off the top rope at WrestleMania alone, like there's a lot of ways he could play the cowboy, you know, there's a lot there. It's just maybe Brock said, no, I'm good. Let me just fight somebody for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be a shorter match, Brock and Omos at Mania. Indeed. If it surpasses 5 minutes, I will be very, very surprised. What? There it is. You heard the drop. It's time for They Said What? So, the three of us have listened to The Masked Man Show and Cheap Heat, as I'm sure all of you fine listeners have as well, because, well, you're already subscribed to this wonderful feed here on The Ringer Wrestling Show. But we get to do something I'm sure you all wish you could do from time to time, and we're going to respond to a take dropped by the likes of the legendary David Shoemaker, Kaz, Peter Rosenberg, or Stat Guy Greg. And for today's edition, they said what? We're going at the authority of the Ringer Wrestling Show, the masked man himself, David Shoemaker. Brian, play the clip.
This might be, in a vacuum, the best storyline in professional wrestling right now. And the, you know, if this is the ending that we just got, it was beautifully told. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the Bloodline storyline is probably the top one, but I mean, this is a really epic story, man. I mean, this, they've done really good character work and whatever. I think my only complaint about it, and I think the reason why it doesn't, I don't think of it in the same terms, is that it's so siloed off that it feels like it's not a piece of everything else.
Okay. Mox Hangman. I have some thoughts, but I'm going to throw it to you guys first. What are your thoughts on what Dave said here?
Brian Ace Waters, is this a better storyline than the Bloodline? And if it's not, how close of it is a good storyline to the Bloodline?
So I guess this is the part where I sort of defend being that I was producing that show.
Uh-huh.
He definitely alluded to the fact that the Bloodline is the number one story for obvious reasons. But this is more so, if anything, equal. But still, I don't know. I'm not big on Hangman and Moxley. And one of the things Dave said was that it was siloed. It was far away from everything else. It just felt like even though it was a part of AEW, it just felt very non-sanctioned-esque. Like it was in its own bubble. But even then, I guess because I probably had checked out a while ago on it, so I couldn't, enjoy it, but it didn't hit with me. It's like, okay, I know what's going to happen. They're going to go out there. They're going to beat each other up. But longevity, I mean, they've been fighting for a while. You know, you go back to when Moxley knocked Paige out, and you go back to, you know, this recent match, and you know you're going to get a feud. You know you're going to get some blood. You know you're going to get, you know, something that feels real. But I like damage control.
Oh, here we go. We get spicy with it.
I do agree. I think the idea of damage control, because of damage control this whole time has kind of just been that. And that's since what? SummerSlam? It's been a one-track focus. I think the idea of this being siloed is important. I think, because like you said, it started with, I had to do a little research. This is back in October when Hangman Page got knocked out. I'm going to assume that if that hadn't happened, they would have been fighting the entire time. But once Page came back, and even before, and I think those are the things that were cool, would be like Moxley and Claudio. They were in the midst of like wrestling as a tag team for a bit, but Moxley's promo was, and if Hangman Page is around, when I see you, I'ma see you. Like, it was just some like on site type stuff. And when Paige was finally like, I think there was one promo where they were talking and they're like, yeah, something, John Moxley later. They're like, Paige's like, oh, Moxley's here. Mm-hmm. And like left the, like there, it's really interesting how they're building that. They've been trading wins. I think they're currently 2-2 ever since Moxley knocked out Paige in that world title match. And the way that Page won that match at Revolution, this ain't over. It's interesting to see him be able to get, like, cause it could have been a number of different wins. I was not expecting a chokeout like that for the end of that match. So I'm not saying fight forever, because this could end ugly. But, you know, I think if Bloodline's number one, low key, this is like a top five storyline if you're paying attention, if you're still tapped in.
And that's the thing, you know, before Ben goes, I'm just saying, like, as far as for my liking, you know right. what I mean? Right. I like what, and I think for me, when I bring up damage control, it's because of this recent shift bringing right. back the women's legends. Mm-hmm. So that's what's got me intrigued, where the Paige Moxley, when you break it down, it makes sense, you know. Wait, he's over here. Wait, he's over there. So it's a constant. It's kind of like, we don't see that too often in wrestling. It's usually when one wrestler focuses on somebody else, then that's who they're focused on. So I can understand that.
My view of this got a little tainted when I went to Dynamite last week, because this feud has been, for me, from my personal perspective and just my taste, it hasn't exactly been my cup of tea. And like, this is coming from someone who I stand for John Moxley. Like, okay. I love John Moxley, love Dean Ambrose, I love all of it. Jonathan Good, shout out to that guy. But it might be that I feel like the feud has almost been a little one-sided in that Mox is kind of dominated, especially from like the promo perspective, right? So cut to Cow Palace, Dynamite, we're in the crowd and Moxley's promo runs, right? He's in the stairwell, he's bleeding profusely during the promo, which, by the way, can we get my guy a Band-Aid like before he cuts his promo? But it's fine. That's neither here nor there. I'm not a medical professional. He cuts his promo. It's great, right? Crowd goes nuts in the building. Show keeps going. Cut to Hangman's promo, which pops up later, right? And it kind of fell flat with that crowd. And it just kind of felt flat in general. Like, I don't know how it played on TV versus how it was in the building. And I kind of had this, while I was in there, I kind of had this aha moment almost, where it was, how much do I like this feud? Because I've been into it, you know, kind of in this buildup and this lead-in going into Revolution. But, and maybe that's not fair. Admittedly, maybe I was affected by everyone else's reaction, like kind of around me, where it was almost a non-reaction, which is, in wrestling, the opposite of what you want. You want to be on one end of the spectrum or the other. So, that's one of the reasons I can't even put it anywhere close to what the Bloodline has going on. I mean, from an entertainment standpoint, obviously those two guys can go, or from a wrestling standpoint, obviously those two guys can go. Like, there's no dismissing that. From an entertainment standpoint, I don't know if I'm fully there. Like, this may be sacrilege. Kind of more interested to see when this Dom Rey Mysterio thing comes to a head.
That's a feud.
I will say that if you want to talk about good storylines that aren't a Bloodline, because I think one of the big things with Mox and Paige, it is there's no titles, there's nothing at stake. It's kind of just like two guys, they don't really like each other, and they're just, anytime they see each other, they're gonna fight. That's an old that's how it was when I was growing up. Like, they just had these feuds, especially when it wasn't for a title or anything. That's, I don't want to say it's rare, but like, you only get to see like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens just beefing like that outside of an actual storyline. We don't normally get to just see that. They'll do it in the ring when it's time to wrestle, but there's so much wrapped up in it now. And I don't want to say it hinders, because I mean, it's Moxley is a star. Paige is, you know, he's getting there. He's one of the, you know, one of the big deals over there in AEW, especially for their future. But without some type of stakes, it can get pushed back really quickly. Like, again, if it wasn't a Texas death match on Sunday, if it was kind of just another bout on that card, it may have been, you know, knocked even a little bit lower, just in terms of, you know, relevance for most people.
Where do you guys stand on Paige in general? Are we pro Hangman Adam Page, or are we just kind of, are we neutral? Which, he's again, there. Not great. Okay.
He's there. You know, I was at one point, I didn't really care for him as world champion. I just wanted more from him. And, you know, his fans would come at me, I'm like, he's boring. You know, I understood why he had to be the guy, and it makes sense. I'm happy for him. It's cool to see an AEW original. But to me, he was boring.
Yeah. He looks like the guy, and I think he wrestles and moves like the guy. A couple of bangers with Bryan Danielson. That was the best of that feud, of that championship run. I don't think that what they did for him did him any favors. And he it wasn't like Paige was having bad matches during his championship run. It was just the fact that none of it really felt like the main event of the show. It always felt like second before the end of the show, something like that. So, you know, but he's feels like one of those guys who, as long as he's able to stay healthy and they're able to keep him growing as a pro wrestler, he should be one of those, you know, main event guys for the company for, you know, the next couple of years. You know, again, assuming that all the chips fall in the right place.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when they were deciding who the first AEW champion was going to be. It was him or Jericho, right? In that match, and I was a staunch supporter of put the title on Hangman right away. Like, if we're going to make the, if AEW was going to make their own lane here, make it an original, right? Don't give it to Jericho, because, you know, he's there in some ways, people are probably still looking at him as like a WWE guy. And in retrospect, they couldn't have made a better call to kind of give Jericho that title and AEW as a whole that legitimacy that they needed up front. And, you know, I think Hangman has gotten better since then. I think the allure of Hangman has kind of faded just a small bit, especially because, and Brian, you mentioned this, I mean, his championship run was, I don't know, it felt very Bron Breakery to me. Oof. You know what I mean? And
I know exactly what you mean, Ben.
Yeah, I will find any moment to throw some shade at Bron Breakker's title run. All right, but before we catch any more flack from the AEW stands out there, let's take a quick break.
Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And we are back. It is now time to welcome to Wednesday Worldwide a very special guest. He is a Ringer.com scribe, as well as the author of Bohemian Rhapsody, a book about the history of professional wrestling in the Bahamas, and the co-author of several fantastic, fantastic pro wrestling autobiographies. He also has the best Twitter profile picture of anyone in this recording. He is Ian Douglas. Ian, welcome to Wednesday Worldwide. How are you doing today?
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing wonderful.
It's good to hear.
Awesome. Awesome. Again, thank you so much for joining us. And the reason we're having you on is because you wrote a fantastic piece for TheRinger.com last week, on March 2nd, actually, titled The Bahamas Wrestling Association, Black Wrestling and the Birth of a Nation. And In the piece, you mentioned specifically that the BWA, it represents a brief and rarely mentioned moment in wrestling history where a grassroots pro wrestling organization created by the people, of the people, and for the people rose up and did its best to fill a void. I'm kind of paraphrasing there. And in writing this piece and kind of looking at that section specifically, in your opinion, how did the BWA influence the current wrestling scene that we are looking at here in 2023?
I don't know. I'm being quite honest. I don't know to what extent it influenced it at all, if I'm being perfectly honest. When to say that it is little mentioned is a bit overblown. It's entirely unmentioned to the extent that there are many Bahamians living in the Bahamas who, to this day, who don't even know that it existed at all. Unfortunately, in fact, when I opened the piece and I interviewed Omar Amir, who's a tremendous up-and-coming wrestler, multi-time OVW heavyweight champion, he had no idea that there had been a grassroots Bahamian wrestling organization in the 1970s. He hadn't heard a hint of anything related to this. Now, I can tell you in terms of influencing the local landscape of the Bahamas and what the expectation was, after the BWA, they expected Black wrestlers to be in positions of prominence. Mm-hmm. Now, prior to this, when the NWA ran in the Bahamas, it was okay to put Sailor Art Thomas or Dorrell Dixon, it was okay to put them on the promotional advertisement for the show, but they weren't truly featured performers. And what was happening in the Bahamas, it might have been a one-off show, but it wasn't a reflection of what was going on in Florida to the extent that these guys were walking away with championships on the back end. But once Eddie Graham and Dory Funk Jr. brought wrestling back to the Bahamas in a true sense in 1981, now you had guys like Butch Reed and Sweet Brown Sugar who were featured prominently to such a degree that it became understood by everyone that followed. You need a Black wrestler in a position of prominence sniffing championship gold, or you really don't even have a show.
Indeed. Indeed. I like that you bring up the fact, Ian, that it was how little known, you know, the BWA was, because it made it while we're doing the piece, and actually it's funny, you know, the process of getting a piece, you know, to its final state, a lot of that is, this may have been one of the most info intensive, just because of the fact that, you know, there's so little information about this out there. But talk about, I mean, you wrote a book, you're writing a book about the history of pro wrestling in the Bahamas. Exactly. I want to know about your process in terms of research, but I want to know, talking about that, where in the process of writing the book did you find like the first piece of information on the BWA? Was it a flyer? Was it a photo? Like, talk about how that actually came up in regards to your research.
That, I remember it well, because I was just poking around. I was poking around online. And I was preparing to go to the gym in our apartment complex here in lovely downtown Durham. I got the Under Armour on. I was all set to go. I was poking around, and I found a Nassau Tribune article that the University of Florida made available from its archives. I found a Nassau Tribune article, and it was a promo for the sensational Bahamian grappler and Iron Man Destroyer, and one of the pieces from, I think, 74. Mm-hmm. It was probably 74. And to say that blew my mind was an understatement. Now, the funny thing is, when I was a kid in Detroit, and my uncles from the Bahamas would come visit, My uncle, Anthony Capron, was the editor-in-chief of the Nassau Guardian for a while. He was also a sports reporter. And when he found out I was a wrestling fan, he was a sports reporter prior. And he was telling me anecdotes about events that he'd been to where Bahamians were coming out of the crowd and they were bringing chairs. And some woman was upset that someone pulled a chair out on her son who was wrestling, and so she grabbed a chair and got involved. And I'm thinking, like, this is ridiculous. I've never heard of wrestling in the Bahamas, but like, then again, what did I know? I was 12. I didn't know anything about anything,
right?
But to find this and to have it lend credence to what he was talking about, mm-hmm. I don't know that I made it to the gym for another 4 hours that evening, because my wife said, okay, I'll meet you in the gym. Suddenly I'm not leaving. My wife leaves. My wife's in the gym for an hour and a half. My wife comes back from the gym. I'm still reading this stuff. But yeah, I just poured over the material, and it completely changed my conception of what this book needed to be when it eventually got released.
I like that.
And so reading the piece, I came across the name Sweet Brown Sugar. And, you know, I saw a pair with Butch Reed, and you talked about how they became popular with the Nassau Stadium audiences.
What's something that you think this generation would learn about Sweet Brown Sugar? We hear about Butch Reed, and, you know, even hearing about Sweet Daddy CQ through his Edge brings him up all the time. But what's something that people would learn about and that would stand out that you think this audience could connect with when it comes to Sweet Brown Sugar?
That they would learn about him. I mean, frankly, I learn more about him all the time. I was I was talking to Mike Rotunda a couple weeks ago about how he got his start in the wrestling business. He got his start when the Destroyer Dick Beyer took him over to Germany to train him and essentially abandoned him for 2 or 3 months and said, "Okay, you're with Otto Vons, figure it out. I'll see you at Christmas." And Sweet Brown Sugar was one of the guys over there who was working essentially the European carnival circuit of Otto Vons. When I was talking to Steve Kern, when Vince McMahon gave him what was essentially a fake NWA World Championship belt to take over there to drop to Tatsumi Fujinami. Afterward, they renamed it the International Championship. But if you look at it up close, it still to this day says World Champion right on it. When he took him over there, the two other lightweights who were wrestling alongside Steve Kern and that were Dynamite Kid, a very thin Dynamite Kid, and Sweet Brown Sugar. And Sweet Brown Sugar was one of the first black masked wrestlers to become fairly well known in any regional territory. Now, as far as what people can take away from him, just that you didn't have to be this, even in the late 70s, early 80s, that not all black wrestlers play the role of like the hulking Haas type wrestler of JYD or Butch Reed or later on Ron Simmons, that you also had these very athletic babyface wrestlers who knew how to work their way through a match and get over with the crowd.
100%. Well, Ian, we got to get into some other stuff. I would love to sit and talk Bahamian Pro Wrestling with you for another 20-30 minutes. But you also cover modern pro wrestling as well. I want people to make clear, our Claudio Classic Noli. That piece went up not too long ago. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But he also spoke with Tony Khan, all this stuff. But in thinking of the modern era, you know, we're about to talk about what's happened with NXT and Roadblock. We're also about to look at, I guess tonight's Dynamite is going to be the fallout from Revolution this past weekend. Is there one thing from either of those shows that has the most interest from you?
Man, honestly, I have not been paying attention for like the last week or so. And honestly, I'll tell you why. I've been finalizing Steve Kern's autobiography, and that should hopefully be done next week. I'll tell you, and I'm not the person who announces something a year in advance and gives updates. I will not tell you, don't tell me about the labor, just show me the baby.
Right.
I should be able to show everybody the baby next week. Forwards 400 plus page autobiography. Covering Kern's career up to about 1987, forwards by Stan Lane and CM Punk, afterward by Natalya Neidhart. So I'm in the final stages of that, and once that's over with, I can get back to actually paying attention to other things going on in my life.
I love it. He's not been paying attention because he's been in the trenches.
That's right.
It's the best reason I've heard ever.
I'm writing 1,000 words of something every day. Somebody just needs to give me something to write about, or I'll give it to myself. Like success is not an accident. Success is scheduled. And if you put yourself on the schedule to crank something out every day, eventually you're going to produce something of value.
I got to write that down.
There it is. Ian, thank you so much for coming on the show. You kind of talked a little bit about what you've got going on right there, but tell people what else you have out there in the world and on the wrestling internets and where they can find you and your incredible work.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at StreamGlass, StreamGlass. In addition to the Steve Kern autobiography, which is hopefully coming out next week, I am working on, I have two other wrestler autobiography projects that are roughly half done. I'm not naming names because I don't want people to pressure me and ask me questions about when they will be released, but hopefully those will both be released sometime within the next year and a half.
Nice. Love it. There it is. Ian, thank you again for coming on Wednesday Worldwide, and we absolutely need to have you back on the show again soon.
Anytime, guys. Thanks so much.
All right, and before we get out of here, let's hit on last night's NXT Roadblock and tonight's upcoming Dynamite. Let's pick the biggest thing that stood out to us from NXT Roadblock, and then let's talk about one more in depth here. So, Brian, kick things off for us. What was your biggest NXT Roadblock takeaway?
Man, thoughts and prayers out to Roxanne Perez. What a match with her and Miko Satomura. And story or no story, they got me hooked. You know, I know they said she was kept overnight. I even saw, you know, prominent news stations pick up the article and pick up the piece. But yeah, that's the match lived up to the hype. You know, it was some parts, you know, you sit there and you want to see the teacher and the student, you know, and it lived up to the hype. But that post-match, man, it took me back to 1995. With Shawn Michaels and Owen Hart. And I can remember as a child sitting there like this.
Yeah.
This is before the Montreal Screwjob. So I was a Shawn Michaels fan.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what stood out.
Hey. Cal, what do you got?
Gigi Dolin getting the win. I mean, I had a feeling once she cut that promo, that's what was going to happen. But it feels like, There's a little bit more left in the tank on this one, so I'm down to see where they take this one.
Right, mine was, it's just really Carmelo Hayes finally being involved in the NXT title picture. Like, I mean, the NXT champion was in the second match of the night, mm-hmm. right?
With matching gear.
Oh my god!
It's like when Sting was champion. I mean, that like if you imagine Sting and the Steiner brothers coming out, and like Sting coming out in like Michigan University colors or something like that. Yeah.
What are we doing here? And it was also just everyone knows I've made my feelings about Braun Breaker's title run very, very clear. But again, I literally just saw this clip on TikTok of when Jericho was on Stone Cold's podcast, and mm-hmm. one of the WrestleManias where he was feuding with Kevin Owens, it was supposed to be for the title. Plans got changed, and then they put him on second, and he was pissed. And Stone Cold immediately knew why. He's like, "Oh, they put you on second. Why are we putting the champion on second at what is supposed to be a featured NXT show? Give the title to Carmelo Hayes.
You might as well.
I don't care if it's finger poke of doomed. Just put the title on the man so that we can restore the importance of the NXT title. Let Braun Breaker go to the main roster and figure it out. But it's Carmelo Hayes' time. I'm sorry. I kind of hijacked the conversation.
No, I understand. You know,
I think we need to go there because so we just watched John Cena and Austin Theory promo, right? And when I watched Carmelo Hayes, the thing I noticed he could have. He didn't just destroy Braun Breaker. He built them up. You know, if you remember watching Tough Enough back in the day, Hulk Hogan would always say, yeah, you build up your opponent so when you beat him, it makes sense. And that's right. Hayes did. He didn't pull an Adam Cole Karrion Kross, which Karrion Kross still hasn't recovered. So, I like to celebrate Carmelo Hayes in this and agree with you. Let's see him get the title stand and deliver.
I was going to say, I mean, normally they would call it takeover, but I mean, this is what stand and deliver right before
stand and deliver.
It's that weekend. I like that you bring it up because we could be weeks away from what you're talking about happening. Because if there's no better time to crown a new champion in NXT than that weekend, and there's also no better time to take a Bron Breakker that Monday after.
Yeah.
Sick him on somebody with some type of like renewed focus or something and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If and when we see Carmelo Hayes at Wale Mania, you guys might have to restrain me from like going up to the guy and just trying to give him a hug and just say, please save us.
We would have last year. We had the same Jordan 12s on.
Oh, okay. He's a 12s guy. I'll find some 12s. I'll find some 12s just so we have a point of conversation.
I don't know if I'm wearing my 550s, my 650s, or some Bo Jacksons. We'll see what happens.
We'll sync offline about our Wale Mania fits. Looking at tonight's AEW Dynamite from Sacramento, what's the one thing you're looking forward to most? Cal, why don't you kick us off?
Wardlow versus Powerhouse Hobbs, only because that's going to be a banger of a match, and B, with what I saw Wardlow post on his Twitter when I woke up this morning, he may not be too happy when he gets into that ring and needs somebody to lash out on. So it's going to be interesting.
Brian, what do you have?
Is the champion going to be on there? Because I need to hear from him. I need to hear from MJF after everything that just transpired. Or is he suspended? Which I don't think.
Oh,
but
because he threw the drink at the kid,
the little kid.
Mm-hmm. So I have a friend who was actually sitting next to them. They actually got moved down there. Oh, so wow. They were sitting, I think, a little up top. Their seats got upgraded. So I don't know if I'm. Is this a work? I don't know. It could be, but also my friend did say it was definitely tequila.
I heard that immediately. Yeah, that it was definitely, because I mean, it was her drink.
Yeah.
That's probably why, because immediately you saw when he took it out of her hand and splashed it, she was, and I don't think that was shocked because of what he did specific, but it, I mean, that was my child, and I mean, that kid, you know, but B, like, that's a whole drink. Like, you know, I mean, I'll just say this. This is why it's good to have some type of plant, because unless this is a very good plant, because I mean I don't want nobody getting hurt. Like when you're going to the wrestling show, you're supposed to be able to boo and cheer and all that stuff, and you're not supposed to, you know, like actually feel like trash. So if this is in fact real, which from the chatter I'm seeing online, it seems like it is. That sucks. That sucks.
I mean, well, first of all, shout out to that kid because he did get taken backstage. He got to meet everybody.
He met Hobbs,
He met Hobbs, you know, hometown hero. Hopefully future TNT champ, you know, win it in the Bay Area, in Northern California while he's still around.
Word.
But man, have either of you gotten a drink thrown in your face, like an alcoholic drink? I have not. I've spilled stuff on myself when I'm taking a sip, and it does burn.
I've spilled a drink on myself, and that's when it was time to put the drink down. But you know, yeah, if you're a little kid, he don't know nothing about that. That's real. Like it's shock, and then it's ow, and then it's why. You know what I'm saying? It's there's a lot going on right there.
That kid will be done with tequila for the rest of his life, because even when he's of age, he's just gonna have flashbacks to this moment where he became.
No, yeah, that's exactly. That's real. That'll keep you away from all the booze.
He's in the history of AEW.
Facts. Oh, hope that kid's doing well for real. Hope he's doing well.
Honestly, though, might have been worth it. Like if that was the price to pay to get backstage at 12 years old. I would have paid that price over and over again. Like, throw all the drinks in my face if I get to go backstage. Shout out to that kid, man. He took it like a champ, and he became, you know, like you said, infamous and part of AEW history. Facts. So, guys, that's how you freaking do Wednesday, man. It's what a show. Be sure to check out our other Ringer Wrestling Show offerings, as we are coming to you every single day of the week We've got The Masked Man Show with David Shoemaker and Kaz on Mondays and Thursdays. We've got Cheap Heat on Tuesdays and Fridays with Peter Rosenberg, Stat Guy Greg, Dip, and you'll find Wednesday Worldwide smack dab in the middle on, you guessed it, Wednesdays. If you're not already, be sure to follow us, subscribe, and hit us with those 5-star ratings here on the Ringer Wrestling Show feed. Cal, Ryan, tell the people where they can find you on the socials and anything else you got going on.
I'm at Cal on Twitter, at CalDub on Instagram. That's it.
You can find me at Brian H. Waters on all social media platforms. And just stay tuned. See what's coming.
Ooh, big tease. And follow the Ringer Wrestling Show while you're at it. And if you're so inclined, you can follow me at Cruise Control. That's Control with a K on the Twitters and the Instagrams. Gentlemen, thanks as always for the Grabs Chat. Everyone else, we will catch you next week.
Worldwide!